Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, May 11th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The European Union warns Harare the continued disappearance of activist Itai Dzamara may affect its bilateral relations with Harare.
Well, I think that this is a very admirable stance by the European Union. However, the only problem is that it is a stance that is almost impossible for either the European Union to follow forward or to defend on the international stage.
The state-owned Zimbabwe Electricity Transmission and Distribution Company says it is owed almost $1 billion in unpaid power bills, with the government and local authorities leading the pack of defaulters.
And President Robert Mugabe's visit to Russia is under the spotlight, with critics saying not much is being generated from his foreign trips to change the lives of the ordinary people back home.
Today marks 2 months and 2 days since the abduction of human rights activist Itai Dzamara, with the European Union warning his continued disappearance may affect its bilateral relations with Harare. In maintaining pressure on Harare over the issues, the EU, which has been issuing statements on Dzamara regularly, released another one today saying the ZANU-PF government must, quote, take all necessary measures to ascertain Dzamara's whereabouts, safeguard his well-being, and accord him the full protection of the law within its overall responsibilities of ensuring the safety of all its citizens. It also urged the authorities to ensure that those responsible for his abduction are brought to justice. In line with a High Court order last month, the EU also urged the authorities to provide regular and thorough progress reports on their search for Dzamara. Relations between Brussels and Harare have thawed incrementally in the past few years, with the EU rolling back the vast of its sanctions against ZANU-PF officials and entities. Reporter Ntungameli Nkomo reached political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda for his take.
Well, I think that this is a very admirable stance by the European Union. However, the only problem is that it is a stance that is almost impossible for either the European Union to follow forward or to defend on the international stage, perhaps with any other competitors in international relations such as China and Russia. And we know very well that the EU is eager to get into Zimbabwe following the growth, and other African countries following the growth of Chinese influence there. And I think that for that reason alone, the European Union is certainly taking a difficult stance and may not be able to carry it through.
Do you think the European Union is now regretting rolling back its sanctions on ZANU-PF?
In the big scheme of things, because international relations is not necessarily about aid and about human rights. International relations is about the interests of the relating countries. I therefore think that the issue, Dzamara's issue, and the issue of the position that the EU has taken will always be subject to the economic and political interests, which I think will always go take precedence. Therefore, I do not think that the EU will is regretting this position. I think that they will from time to time make condemnations, just as President Obama recently said that, you know what, Colonel Gaddafi was a dictator. We could constantly bash at and lambast for human rights abuses, but he was not necessarily a terrorist. And I think that occasionally you find that the West does a good job of condemning human rights abuses without necessarily taking any substantive action, and I think that this is going to be the case in the long term.
That was political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda on the line with reporter Ntungameli Nkomo from the United Kingdom.
President Robert Mugabe's visit to Russia is under the spotlight, with critics saying not much is being generated from his foreign trips that can help the ordinary man on the street. Mr. Mugabe, at the weekend, joined other international leaders in celebrating Russia's annual Victory Day. Russia commemorated the end of World War II in Europe on Saturday. But critics of the 91-year-old Zimbabwean leader say not much is being derived from his foreign trips. But ZANU-PF member and former lawmaker Dr. Bright Matonga thinks otherwise.
It is a significant visit in terms of the fact that he's been appointed as the president of obviously of Zimbabwe, the chairman of SADC, and the chairman of the African Union, in the sense that obviously the Russians would want to market the Russian agenda, and also the president would want to market the African agenda of beneficiation to the Russian people and the Russian government. Russia has been a key ally of Zimbabwean government before and after the liberation struggle. A lot of our cadres were trained in Russia. A lot of Zimbabwean students were also trained, went after independence. They went to Russia to attend various educational programs. They went to Ukraine, or they call it Ukraine. They went to Crimea. They went to the Russia now is it is. So there has been a contact. There has been a significant relationship. The last visit by President Mugabe was in 1987. Obviously, then Russia underwent or was going through some challenges, the breakup of the Soviet Union, and they had to focus on the rebuilding of Russia. So it is a significant visit.
That was former ZANU-PF lawmaker Dr. Bright Matonga speaking earlier with Blessing Zulu. A political commentator Charles Mangongera says President Robert Mugabe's trips will start bearing fruit once the government begins to respect the rule of law and property rights.
I don't know if anything significant will come out of it because, as you know, the government, President Robert Mugabe, is pursuing what they call a look-east policy, in which ties with countries like China and Russia and so on and so forth. In the last few months, we have heard a lot, particularly in the public media, claims that there are mega deals that have been signed between the government of China and also even with the government of Russia. But we have not seen those mega deals. They have just remained on paper. We haven't seen any significant, you know, investment inflow coming into the country. So, you know, in as much as the public media has tried to create this alibi about investment from this country, we have not seen anything significant. You also need to understand that Russia is struggling with its own issues. So for Mr. Mugabe, this is a way of, you know, saying to the West, you know, an enemy of an enemy becomes a friend.
And what needs to be done by Zimbabwe as a country to make sure that, you know, such meetings do at the end of the day yield something positive that can change or help the ordinary person on the street in particular?
Well, no investor, whether Chinese, Russian, European or American, is going to put their money into Zimbabwe as long as the government of Zimbabwe has not demonstrated that it is ready to do business. And demonstrating that it is ready to do business is by ensuring that you have a clear investment code, particularly around issues of indigenization and empowerment. Number two is to ensure that you respect the rule of law and you demonstrate that you respect for the rule of law by implementing the Constitution. Right now, they have not implemented the Constitution. You know, there is continuation of violation of property rights.
That was political analyst Charles Mangongera in Harare.
The state-owned Zimbabwe Electricity Transmission and Distribution Company says it is owed almost $1 billion in unpaid power bills, with the government and local authorities among the chief culprits. Ivan Chifera's details from Harare.
Julian Chinembiri, the ZETDC Managing Director, told the National Assembly's Mines and Energy Portfolio Committee that some of the major defaulting companies are in the mine sector and industry, with domestic users and farmers also failing to pay. Mining companies and industry owe $244 million, domestic users $299 million, and farmers $79 million. He says the companies implementing various debt recovery strategies to collect the money it is owed. He said the prepaid electricity meter system has been useful in ensuring that ZETDC receives a certain percentage that is deducted from power purchases to cover the debt. For instance, if a customer buys $100 worth of electricity, 30% of the amount goes towards debt recovery. He says the company has also saved electricity as a result of the system introduced 3 years ago.
The installation of prepaid meters has enabled customers to manage their consumption. An estimated 103 megawatts saved to date.
He said the company's local and international debt stands at above $300 million, adding this relates to money borrowed from financial institutions to finance various projects. Though there are various projects being undertaken by ZETDC parent company ZESA Holdings and some of its subsidiaries to improve power generation, the country has a serious power deficit of more than 600 megawatts. With a daily peak demand of 1,950 megawatts, Zimbabwe generates 1,250 megawatts, leading to load shedding. Power purchase agreements with neighboring countries are not yielding anything, as the countries are also under stress, the committee was told. Lawmakers meanwhile expressed anger at Chinembiri's revelations that his company was giving the more than 5,000 ZESA employees and pensioners 160 worth of electricity and Minister of Energy and Power Development workers $100 worth of electricity monthly as part of their benefits. Maswingo Central lawmaker Edmund Mere of ZANU-PF said this translated to 10 million of electricity distributed for free every month. He said this was unacceptable given the company is struggling financially. Several members of the committee complained that the amount being given for free was too much, given that average monthly electricity consumption for an ordinary family of six stood at about $50. The committee ordered Chinembiri to provide Parliament with a list of all those getting free electricity before Monday, when the committee is expected to further discuss the matter. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe Prisons and Correctional Services Deputy Commissioner in charge of administration, Agre Machingauta, told the Defense and Security Committee today that the attempted jailbreak at Chikurubi Maximum Prison in March was politically motivated. He said the move was meant to embarrass President Robert Mugabe, who was on a state visit in Japan at the time.
The motive behind the rioters' behavior was mainly to escape from prison in order to shame the Zimbabwe Prisons and Correctional Services and nation at large. You may recall that the timing coincided with the visit of His Excellency to Japan. Hence, the calculation was to embarrass the head of state while he is in a foreign country.
Machingauta said more than 2,000 dangerous criminals at the prison would have been able to run loose had the jailbreak been successful.
The information that we got was that they were meant to go and attack senior government official, and they really wanted to go. But because of our lateness, after being pre-warned, no one even left a foot out of the prison.
Four prisoners were killed, while 19 prison officers were injured during the failed jailbreak attempt. He said it is not true that the problem at the prison started because of food shortages. Machingauta revealed that Treasury has availed $200,000 to repair the prison facilities following the attempted security breach at Chikurubi, adding the prison security remains compromised in the absence of security gadgets such as CCTVs and security cameras. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The ruling ZANU-PF has stepped up its campaigns for the oncoming by-elections amidst reports from the state media that several MDCT members from the Dangamvura Chikanga constituency defected to the ruling party during a weekend rally addressed by Vice President Pelekezela Mpoko and other senior party officials. The defectors include Nyanga South Councillor and Provincial Secretary for Finance Viola Tongoona, former Deputy National Treasurer in the Women's League Tokozani Bote, and Irene Chigayo, the Secretary for Information and Publicity in Dangamvura. However, MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu denies that the above defected from his party, saying they had already left the MDCT for the renewal team.
So the long and short of it is that no member of the MDCT has defected from the MDCT to ZANU-PF in Manicaland or anywhere else for that matter. This is the usual state-managed defections by ZANU-PF. The people of Zimbabwe are aware that ZANU-PF is beleaguered, that ZANU-PF is faction-ridden, that ZANU-PF is collapsing.
The defectors were paraded in state media and they described your party as lacking direction and interest of the people. What has your party done to reconcile different ideas, especially stemming from whether or not to contest in the oncoming by-elections?
We are united, we are focused, and right now we are going around the country. President Morgan Tsvangirai and the top leadership of the party are holding very successful rallies throughout the length and breadth of the country, explaining to the millions of our supporters why we say we are adopting the theme of no reforms, no elections. And for anyone to then say that we are confused, that is laughable, and that obviously has to be dismissed with the contempt that it deserves.
That was MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu on the line from Harare. Reached for comment, MDC Renewal Team spokesman Jacob Mafume told Studio 7 the defectors are not members of his party as they remained with the MDCT during the formation of the Renewal Team, adding he is not surprised that his former party is losing members because of its unpopular policies.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawuye looks at the diarrhea outbreak in the country.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
South Africa's main opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, or DA, said it voted Musi Maimane as leader yesterday, making him the first black person to head the traditionally white party.
The United Nations says 300,000 people in South Sudan have lost access to life-saving aid after fighting forced relief groups to withdraw from the town of Lia.
And Saudi Arabia's King Salman will not take part in a U.S. Arab summit hosted this week by President Barack Obama. Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jaber said Sunday, cancelling also a planned White House meeting that had been announced only days earlier.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C.
In our health segment today, Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawuye talks with the head of the Epidemiology and Disease Control in the Health Ministry, Dr. Portia Manangazira, on the rising diarrhea cases in the country. The Health Ministry says diarrheal cases are going up in the country, with the weekly surveillance report showing that 12 people have died of the disease so far this year, with Mashonaland Central being hardest hit. According to a report in the Herald newspaper, five of the deaths reported were from children under the age of five. Dr. Manangazira tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga those suspecting they have diarrhea should visit their nearest clinic or hospital immediately to avoid complications.
We acknowledge that we have diarrhea and other enteric diseases as a public health problem in the country. We have seen an increase rather than a decrease or stabilization of cases over the past 5 years or so. So we continue to record quite high numbers. The cases that consult our health facilities, but also even death, as you rightly say, there continues to be the disparity, because the majority of the common diarrhea cases happen in children under the age of 5 years. And even when you analyze, the deaths are also happening more in children under the age of five. And it's really because their immune systems are still developing. So if they're exposed to poor hygienic conditions or unsafe water or unsafe food. They are likely to suffer the diarrhea, but also the complications, including death from the diarrhea. So I would say we still have quite a sizable problem of common diarrhea.
When we look at the water situation in the country, when we look at urban areas, people are still not having clean, adequate water. And also in the rural areas, some of the water sources are unsafe. What would you advise people to do before consuming water to avoid getting diarrhea?
It's quite a big challenge that the safe water coverage in the country remains quite low. And that includes even the urban areas where we expect at least 90% of the population to have potable water, which is of acceptable standards. In the rural areas, we would also want people to have access to safe water, and this is either through boreholes or protected wells. And sanitation conditions also contribute towards these diarrhea and enteric diseases that we're talking about. So we really want a situation where at least 90% of the population has access to safe water and sanitation, whether they are living in the rural or urban areas. So that being the case, the scenario of low coverage of sanitation and water, it then translates into unsafe water and even unsafe food and poor hygiene practices. Because you will appreciate that if the water availability is reduced, even hand washing then becomes a problem. However, we continue to encourage the population to ensure that the water that they drink has been rendered safe, either by boiling or by treating it with a chlorine preparation. Chlorine for water treatment comes in the form of the AquaTabs or Water Guard, which is a commercial preparation that people can buy for a few cents or even you change when you purchase groceries. It's thrown into the water so that water that is consumed or used for preparation of food that is eaten raw, such as our fruit or salad, is rendered safe at the point that it is being used. So we continue to encourage that, but also in terms of food, making sure that food is safe during preparation all the way up to consumption. If there happens to be any leftover food, it needs to be covered so that it's not accessed by flies or cockroaches, which tend to contaminate the food. And when we want to eat leftover food, it must be reheated thoroughly before consumption. And then finally, we continue to encourage mothers to breastfeed their babies. It protects them against diarrhea and enteric diseases by improving their immunity, but also minimizing exposure to unsafe water and unsafe food before the time that they are supposed to be introduced to the full family diet. So we really encourage breastfeeding. And also thorough hand washing, at nappy change, after using the toilet, before preparing food, before consuming food. So we really encourage individual, family and community hygiene.
And should someone suspect that they have diarrhea, what would you advise them to do?
When somebody sees that their bowel habit has changed, they must see a health facility. And in children, it may be both diarrhea and vomiting, and they really get dehydrated quite fast. So while preparing to go to the health facility or to see a health worker, we encourage that fluid intake improves, including preparation of the salt sugar solution or the oral rehydration salt, so that even on the way to the health facility, somebody is already rehydrating so that they avoid the situation of becoming too dehydrated. Then at the health facility, the appropriate treatment will be provided.
That was head of the Epidemiology and Disease Control in the Health Ministry, Dr. Portia Manangazira, speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mthanganyawuye from Harare. The Health Ministry says so far this year, 183 people have died.
The Ministry of Primary and Secondary Education has come up with a draft curriculum proposing the introduction of foreign languages like Chinese and the use of new grading systems at ordinary level based on theory, practical examinations and continuous assessment. In an announcement made on the state-controlled Herald newspaper today, the ministry said the other compulsory languages to be introduced in all government schools are French, Swahili, and Portuguese. If approved by cabinet, the new curriculum will result in final ordinary level grades are being based on 40% theoretical examinations, 30% practical examinations, and 30% continuous assessment. The current system is based only on final examinations. according to Zimbabwe Teachers Association Chief Executive Sifiso Ndlovu, who took part in the curriculum review. The proposals are designed to mold students so that they are ready for the outside world.
We have been part of the curriculum review, not only this current one, but also the initial attempt that was made in 1999 under the Curriculum Commission of Inquiry into Education and Training. And now we are seeing a development of that by trying to look at the framework of review, which is going to address and bring about the identity, values, and the heritage and history and cultural traditions of Zimbabwe. We are saying this curriculum must answer to these things in order to bring about a complete citizen.
So now we see that Chinese, French, Swahili, and Portuguese will be compulsory at all government schools. Did you agree to this?
The issue of compulsory teaching has not come to the fore. But what has come to the fore is the exposition of the learners to the various languages, not only the issues of foreign languages. We are also talking of indigenous languages.
But is it possible to actually introduce these subjects in Zimbabwe, since there are few Chinese teachers, Swahili teachers?
That is the starting point. You will start, of course, with the training of the teachers. In other words, teacher capacity building.
That was ZIMTA Chief Executive Officer Sifiso Ndlovu.
The Castle Lager Premier Soccer League race has changed leadership once again. Reporter Michael Cariati tells us who is now at the top.
Triangle are back at the summit of the Castle Lager Premier Soccer League table after a 6-0 spanking of Wawa Prisons at Gibo Stadium yesterday. The Sugar Sugar Boys, who are coached by former Islanders mentor Kelvin Kaindu, have not lost a game at home, and they have a dozen goals saw them leapfrog overnight leaders Chicken Inn on goal difference. Both teams are on 20 points after 9 games, and Triangle have scored 23 goals in 9 games, an average of 2 goals per game. This was also our Prison's second 6-goal defeat after an early hammering by How Mine. Chicken Inn coach Joey Antipas was disappointed with his team's 1-0 draw against ZPC Kariba after conceding a last-minute goal and surrendering top position in the league. Dynamos remain among the leading pack after a last-minute goal from Oscar Machapa gave them victory over visiting FC Platinum. Dynamos are 3 points behind the joint leaders, and coach Dave Mangora was pleased with the win after 2 consecutive defeats. Blue Giants Islanders started to a 1-0 draw at home to Harare City and remain in 6th position. However, Islanders coach Bongani Mafu saw a few positives in his team in the game, but is crying over too many missed chances. How Mine overcame Cholocho Pirates with the defender Tapua Kumbuyani, grabbing the all-important goal in the 1-0 win. Their outspoken coach Luke Masomere thinks his team is doing very, very well. The other Premier Soccer League results were as follows. Buffalo 0, Capes United 0, Chapungu 3, Dongo Sawmill 0, Wange 2, Flame Lily 0. This was Wange's first win of the season. After 9 games, the top 4 teams are Triangle 20 points, Chicken Inn 20 points, Dynamos 17 points, and How Mine 15 points. The bottom 4 teams are Cholocho Pirates 8 points, Wawa Prisons 8 points, Flame Lily 6 points, Dongo Sawmills 3 points. Ironically, all the bottom 4 teams were promoted into the Premiership at the beginning of this season. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Carrier.
Thanks, Michael. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about President Robert Mugabe's visit to Russia and related issues.
And now to recap today's top stories.
The European Union warns Harare the continued disappearance of activist Itai Dzamara may affect its bilateral relations with Zimbabwe.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.